दीक्षितैवाम् आधिष्ठा साखलिर्जातवेपथु थाम् उद्याथासि माहेदाम् धण्डपाणिम् इवोद्यतम् सुत उवाच परीक्षितैवाम् आधिष्ठा साखलिर्जातवेपथु थाम् उद्याथासिम् आहेदम् दण्डपाणिम् इवोद्यतम्
Sri Suta Goswami said, the personality of Kali, thus being ordered by Maharaj Parikshit, began to tremble in fear. Seeing the king before him like Yamaraj, ready to kill him, Kali spoke to the king as follows. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The king was ready to kill the personality of Kali at once, as soon as he disobeyed his order. Otherwise, the king had no objection to allowing him to prolong his life. The personality of Kali also after attempting to get rid of the punishment in various ways, decided that he must surrender unto him. Thus he began to tremble in fear of his life. The king or the executive head must be so strong as to stand before the personality of Kali like the personality of death, Yamaraj. The king's order must be obeyed, otherwise the culprit's life is in risk. That is the way to rule the personalities of Kali, who create disturbance in the normal life of the state citizens. Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that where there is light, there can be no darkness. And in the same way, where there is Krishna, the illusions of Maya are dispelled like the darkness of the night before the sun. In this age of Kali Yuga, the whole world is cast in an abyss of great darkness. And this darkness takes the form, essentially, of mass propaganda to divert human society's attention away from the remembrance that they are the eternal servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The greatest problem, which is in fact the source of all problems, is forgetfulness of Krishna and our relationship with Him. When we forget that we are the eternal soul and that our real pleasure is to love and serve the Supreme Soul, Krishna, we are cast into this material existence, which is constituted by the Lord's arrangement by the three modes of material nature. Sattva-guna, Rajaguna, Tamoguna. Due to the influences of these modes of material nature, the conditioned soul tries to find happiness in various ways. And according to our actions, there will always be an equal corresponding reaction. And thus the spirit soul, by his own free will, entangles himself more and more and more in the shackles of Maya. Karmic reaction comes, sometimes bringing pleasure, sometimes bringing pain. And according to the karma that is due to us, due to our own destiny which we have created, we respond, we think, and then we speak, and then we act. And the response further incriminates us in a deeper condition of karma. Essentially, everyone is trying to avoid suffering and experience pleasure. When suffering comes, or when we fear that it may come, we behave in such a way, and according to the nature of how we behave, we are paving the future destiny of our soul. Similarly, according to the particular influence of the modes of nature, we choose to try to find pleasure. Those actions are incriminating us to be bound up deeper and deeper in the laws of karma. And these laws of material nature are God's laws. They are irrefutable. They are irresistible. We have our freedom to choose how to respond to the particular circumstances that come upon us. But once we make our choice, we have nothing to choose as far as what the reaction will be. The reaction becomes predestined. You have nothing to say about it. You no longer have any freedom, what's going to come upon you. But how you respond to that, you have complete freedom. And in this way, the conditioned soul, forgetful of Krishna, continues to try to make so many materialistic arrangements to be free from suffering, and to try to find pleasure. Ultimately, a wise person knows that we have nobody to blame but ourselves. We want to blame other people. We want to blame circumstances. We want to say this is not fair. On the relativistic level, on the grossest platform, sometimes things are not fair. But perhaps this is because you are not fair in the past to others, and therefore it is fair that they are not fair to you. That is the laws of material nature. But everything that comes, we have to assume full responsibility. But the most important thing is not to try to understand who to blame, but to try to understand how to respond in this situation with tolerance and patience and wisdom in such a way that I am creating a future. If we act piously, if we do not criticize, if we accept in a mood of forgiveness, tolerance, patience, and we act according to the standards of morality, with the best interest of others always in mind, that is called a mode of goodness. And the Shastra says we must come to the mode of goodness in order to transcend the modes of material nature. But ultimately, the mode of goodness is still a type of shackle. It is still a type of bondage. Ultimately, through the mode of goodness, we may even be elevated to the heavenly abodes. But the reactions are temporary. And there is every chance, due to the intricacies of material nature, that we could again act according to the lower modes and be cast down from our position. Therefore, Krishna says there is only one solution to the problems of this world. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayi sami masucha. We must surrender to Krishna, abandoning all other varieties of religion. This is the path of fearlessness. The age of Kali is an age where surrender to Krishna is very much obscured by the powers of illusion and temptation. And even religion, in the name of surrendering to God, there is so much compromise and so much corruption. And misleading by leaders. But here we find that the king is actually the representative of Krishna. This is how human society has been arranged by God Himself. You see, there is no need to speculate under any situations, because if we have the guidance of proper Brahmins or Vaishnavas who are learned in the Shastras, Krishna has already worked out everything for us. He has already answered all of our major questions in life. When we forget Krishna, and if we forget Guru and Shastra and Sadhu, then we are just cast into the realm of mental speculation. And this is what we find today. People are coming together to form governments. And they are coming together to write constitutions. And they are having their legislative assemblies to try to decide what should be the law, what should not be the law, what should be the policies, what are the rights of the president, what are the rights of the vice president, what type of veto power they have over the parliamentary procedures, and so on and so forth. But this process will never actually help society, because Krishna has already given the specific format of how the society can be delivered and find real happiness and relief from pain. And what is that? The Varnashram Dharma, the system of the four Varnas and four Ashrams. There is the Brahmins. The Brahmins are very simple, they are very self-controlled, they are very, very learned in the scriptures, and according to the Varnashram system that is truly presented by Krishna, Daivi Varnashram, everyone is a Vaishnava. All the four Varnas, all the four Ashrams, are dedicating their lives in the service of Krishna and all of their occupations. Samsadir haritoshanam. So when the Brahmins are great devotees of Krishna, coming in disciplic succession, They actually understand Krishna's plan. And they are like the heads of society who give direction to everyone. And the people in general, because they see that the Brahmins are actually living for the interest of others, they are truthful and they are simple. They are self-controlled. They are clean. Therefore, why should we distrust them? They have nothing to gain. They are simply living for the sake of society. And the king, who is the executive leader of the government, he is the humble servant of the Brahmins. And he is heroic, and he is honorable. He is willing to risk his life, he's willing to give his life to protect even the least significant of his citizens. And when a king is of this stature, he is considered to be the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in society. And that's why traditionally we find kings sitting on thrones, wearing nice crowns and jewels, living in opulence. Today people do not understand why. They just consider that they're just big, big sense enjoyers, or they're very, very wealthy. But actually, in ancient times, the king is the representative of God, and he is accepting all these things on behalf of God. And when people really see God in the king, they have faith. But as time goes on in the age of Kali Yuga, the kings no longer act as representatives of God. They are no longer the humble servants of the Brahmins, but rather they become servants of their own egoistic conceptions. And therefore, gradually people lose their trust, and they don't want kings anymore. How many kings are left in the world? Real kings? Practically none. Maybe in some tiny country there may be one. Now kings and queens are just, what would we call them? They're just status symbols. They have no real power or influence. The King of England, the Queen of England, nobody cares what they say. They're involved in so many scandals, and they're so basically useless. They have all this money, and the people are just always criticizing, trying to take it away. Right? And how did this democracy of capitalism, communism, how did all these things come about when the king was no longer representing God? Rightfully so, the citizens couldn't tolerate being under their rule. They could see they were exploiting, they were making so many mistakes. Even if they had good intentions, they were usually always wrong, and they could never satisfy everyone. So therefore, a world which at one time was nothing but kingdoms. Some hundreds of years ago, there was no such thing as voting. It was unheard of, voting for the leader. Throughout the world, there was just a series of kingdoms, and there was one emperor who presided over the entire world. Parikshit Maharaj, Yudhisthira Maharaj, like that. And the people, we don't see people revolting against Maharaj, Parikshit, or Yudhisthira, not the masses. They trusted them. They loved them. Why? Because they saw God in them. They saw religion personified in them. They saw genuine protection and direction toward the goal of life in them. They saw real prosperity due to the king's personal example through his own adherence as well as instructions for others to perform sacrifice. In the Shastras, we read of so many great kings like this. Maharaj Janaka, when there was a great, great drought in Mithila, the people were in distress, and naturally they turned to the king, what should we do? We know you'll tell us the right thing, because we know you are humble to the Brahmins and you are representing God himself. The king himself began to perform a great sacrifice. And even the Brahmins. The Brahmins took the role of oxen and the king took the role of a simple ox keeper. And they began to plow the dry grounds together. What a wonderful example of how the Brahmins and the king are really the most humble servants of the whole society, willing to take on the most difficult tasks, the most menial tasks, to serve the kingdom and the people. In this way, Sita appeared and the rains began to pour and there was prosperity. This is a real king. But now, because people have lost their faith, gradually, one by one by one, the kings were overthrown by the people in general. In various ways, sometimes through revolution, they would just attack and chop their heads off and plunder all their property and distribute it to the masses. Or sometimes just some other rival would just, in this way, instigate the common people to turn against, and then he would become king, and he would exploit and plunder everything for himself. And then a few years later, somebody else would throw them out, and then people got so frustrated with all these crazy, corrupt, exploitative kings, they just said, no kings. We'll just vote from amongst ourselves who will be the leader. And Srila Prabhupada said, when there's no proper spiritual head, when people are not directed according to Guru Sadhu Shastra, Kalo Shudra Sambhave. In the age of Kali, everyone is by nature Shudra. No real spiritual or material qualifications. Lower than Shudra. In the most materialistic sense. Unless they have bona fide spiritual master and bona fide guidance, they are all Shudra. So Prabhupada said, what is this government for the people, of the people, and by the people? He said it means government of the people, of the Shudras, by the Shudras, and for the Shudras. And what do you get as a king? You don't get a Kshatriya following Brahmins. You get a person who is totally unqualified. And that is what the leadership of the whole world is at this state in the age of Kali. And even the so-called Kshatriyas, who are very heroic and courageous, do they really understand the science of God consciousness? Are they actually humbling themselves before the Brahmins? Today's leaders, they don't humble themselves before the Brahmins. They consider themselves in their egoistic ways to be that the Brahmins are depending on me. I am the savior of religion. I am the protector of Hinduism. I am the protector of Christianity. I am the protector of Islam, whatever it may be. And they'll do so many favors. And they'll have all the Brahmins and sannyasis coming to them with folded hands, begging them for favors. Yes, I will bestow this favor upon you. But don't forget what I have done for you. Like this. But Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Dasarath, they were not like this. They were humble servants of the sannyasis and the brahmins and the qualified brahmacharis. Even Krishna himself was the humble servant of the Brahmin Sudama. Who today, when Sudama Vipra came to Krishna's palace, Krishna put Sudama on his own seat. When Vishwamitra Muni came to Dasarath, he put Vishwamitra on his throne and worshipped him with all royal paraphernalia. If you go to Delhi, will the president or prime minister put the sannyasi or brahmacharis on their throne and say, "How can I serve you?" You'll have to make an appointment. And if you don't, if you're not very, very wealthy and have so many connections and have so much political advantage to them, they won't even see you. They won't even look your direction. Today, politicians, when they approach saintly persons, they do usually do it for political purposes, to win the sentiments of the people. But are they really willing to surrender to their advice? No. Therefore, it's just a matter of time till they are kicked out. The people just, they vote them in, they vote them out. They vote somebody else in, they vote them out. And as time goes on, in practically every nation in the world, nobody even considers anybody a worthy candidate. So much corruption. And when the blind lead the blind, everyone just falls into the ditch of material confusion and speculation. But every leader on every level in society is meant to be a humble servant of the Lord who is directing their dependence in knowledge. Lord Rishabhdev has said, "You have no right to be a mother or a father unless you direct your child in such a way that they will never take birth again. You have no right to be a teacher. You have no right to be a king." On every level, leaders of society must lead people to the goal of life. Maharaj Parikshit was such a person. Therefore, when he saw Kali, quarrel and hypocrisy personified, causing harm to an innocent cow and an innocent bull, he immediately, without going to any courtrooms, without issuing citations, indictments, let them out on bail, make a court date, have the advocates meet and decide the terms, try to make some settlement out of court if that's possible. If that's not possible, postpone the court date due to some legal technicality. And then just before that, another legal technicality, postpone the court date again. Meanwhile, the witnesses are getting old. Some of them are dying. Some of them are losing their brain substance day by day. And then you get some jury. Jury, what is a jury? Just conditioned souls who have so much prejudice, so much bigotry, so much confusion in their minds. And usually they're basically ignorant, materially, spiritually, and they sit for weeks and weeks and weeks to hear a case, and they really don't know what's going on. And if the lawyer combs his hair nicely and smiles toward the ladies of the jury, then he will get his client off, not guilty. Because although they don't really see or hear anything else, they know what's going on. This is justice today. Even when everybody knows a person is guilty. Recently in the United States of America, big, big case, such a famous case, everywhere, even in the Indian newspapers, I was seeing the news about this case. One of our devotees from Los Angeles, who's friends with big, big people in the legal system of Los Angeles, told me that this man frankly told one of his attorneys that he was guilty. He did it. There was no question about it. Every piece of evidence said he did it. There was nothing that proved that he didn't do it. The prosecution, for weeks and weeks, months, they were just presenting evidence that he did it. And privately, he admitted he did it. Why? Because he did it. He killed somebody. His own wife. So, he was found not guilty. Why? Because he was a famous athlete before he killed his wife. Something like a cricket star in India. Equivalent to that. Everyone liked him. So it really didn't matter. And his lawyers, he paid so many millions of dollars, and his lawyers were just expert at just bewildering the jury. Just totally bewildering. This trial, the proceedings of the prosecution and the defense, they presented evidence for something like 8 months. And after the 8 months, the jury is supposed to deliberate. They're supposed to go over everything and come to their final decision. These poor people, after sitting in this courtroom for almost a year, every day, just listening to all kinds of technical craziness that they didn't know anything about, they went back there, and in about 20 minutes, they just said, he's not guilty. Obviously, because we like them. This is justice. If you have money, you can do anything and get away with it. But a poor man who doesn't have so many millions of dollars, who is not famous and influential, even if he's completely innocent, he goes to jail for life. This is Kali Yuga. But Maharaj Parikshit, he was not that type of government leader. He saw Kali. He was guilty. He just drew his sword and was really ready to kill him on the spot. Parikshit Maharaj ki. Because he is the representative of God. And he has knowledge. He knows what's good for the society. He knows what's good for the person. There's no speculation. There's no compromise. There's no hesitation. This man is rascal, he must die. Because Parikshit Maharaj had control over his mind and his senses, he could immediately discriminate what was the truth. On the spot justice. And that is mercy. Today's society is merciless. Merciless to the soul. Passing so many laws that simply cast deeper, deeper ignorance and karmic reaction upon society. But Parikshit Maharaj, when he drew the sword, he stood before Kali
like Yamaraj, the lord of death.
And even this most powerful rascal, Kali,
he began to tremble in fear.
He understood he had two choices, surrender or die. And this should be the two choices that every citizen has in a kingdom, surrender or die. And that is a proper king. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would preach like this, and devotees would become very much, some were excited and enlivened, and some were afraid. The good citizens, they were fearless because Maharaj Parikshit was protecting them in such a way. But the rogues and the thieves, their hearts were filled with fear. They knew there was nowhere to run, there was nowhere to go. He was going to catch them and destroy them if they didn't surrender. So because of Maharaj Parikshit's great fearless quality of a true representative of God, Kali himself surrendered to God, to Maharaj Parikshit. Darkness personified had no alternative but to surrender to him. So in this age of Kali Yuga, in the absence of great kings like Parikshit Maharaj, the whole society is so far off its track. There is so much confusion, so much speculation, so much suffering, so much sinful activity. It is the duty of this Krishna consciousness movement to establish truth. One time they asked Srila Prabhupada, can we make you the prime minister? Can we make you the king? Srila Prabhupada said, no. I will be the guru for the king. Srila Prabhupada wanted the Krishna consciousness movement to actually give direction and knowledge. The way the world is the class of people rule society. The masses choose their own leaders, and then that leader, when he gets power, exploits them. We take the best amongst ourselves and put him to protect us, but because he's not really a high-class person, when he gets that position, he exploits us. Then we tear him down and put somebody else amongst us up there. He exploits us, we tear him down, put somebody else. In this way, the world of the cheaters and the cheated. Therefore, Krishna consciousness means we want to try to preach to the leaders, but that is very difficult. But if we preach to the people in general, and influence them with transcendental knowledge and real spiritual principles, by their power, they will put Krishna-conscious people as the heads of the state, as the leaders of society. And don't think it is impossible. So therefore, we must try to approach everyone and anyone and educate them in the science of Krishna-consciousness. It is the only hope. Wonderful programs like we have had last night. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people hearing Harikatha, tasting the nectar of Lord Chaitanya's Harinam Sankirtan, learning about the glories of the founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada, many taking his books, eating prasad. Gradually people are becoming educated and qualified. like preaching in the colleges and universities, gradually educating and purifying the future leaders of society. In this way, as we reach more and more and more and more people, the whole society will become transformed. On one level, Kali Yuga is progressing, and people, a certain class of people, are going to get more and more degraded. But we must give the opportunity for the sincere class of people to actually have the intelligence and the direction by which they can be real leaders of society, really make a difference in the world. Therefore, this is the greatest, most important service that we can render through book distribution, through Hari Kirtan, through preaching, through various forms of disseminating the message of Krishna consciousness to everybody possible. Because Krishna is in the sound of his name. And people will find real shelter within the chanting of his name. If we give them proper direction of how to live, how to function within their particular varna and particular ashram, and we induce them to chant Krishna's name, then gradually society will become purified. And Kali will again have to surrender to the representative of God.